Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You'd be surprised at how powerful female bonding can be.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 18, Neverland. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. Thank you for being here. If you want to get even more of us, that's available to you. It's called our Patreon. And This Friday, April 25th, we're going to be talking about a Mad Magazine spoof of Dawson's Creek from April 2000. Yes, 25 years ago, the gang from Cape Side made it into Mad Magazine. This was in the post-Eve era, so is she in the story? Yes. So you will hear us discuss everything you need to know about Dudson's Creek, as well as the rest of the issue, as applicable or relevant or interesting. And yes, there will be visual aids. So go to againwiththispodcast.com/club to find out more about what you get when you join us on Patreon, because it's not nothing. It's a lot.
No.
All right, let's get into it, starting with our B plot. Jack's dad is perfectly able to bond with a different gay kid. Not saying we're going to race through this so we can get back to Joey and Pacey, but actually that's exactly what I'm saying. Not really, but kind of. We open at the McPhee house where both siblings are eating breakfast outside, as one does in March in Massachusetts.
Oh, sure. My favorite thing to do.
They're matching in autumnal tones. It's not until Andy comes around the table we see she is in a cargo maxi skirt with the little tabs at the hem so that, like, you can ruche up the sides. Remember?
Uh-huh.
What a hideous time.
Yeah.
Not come back.
No.
She's had a bad morning and lists her various grievances. Jack has no reaction except a smirk, so she calls him on it so that he can tell her it's because Ethan is coming to spend the weekend. She asks about romance, but Jack says two gay males can be friends without it turning sexual. Sidebar, because Ethan said it wasn't going to. Also, with all his experience of knowing one gay guy. Andy asks what their dad says, but since he's going to be on a business trip that weekend, Jack decided not to risk a fight about it. Andy winces as she says the trip is canceled. Jack decides to be mature. He's almost an adult, and if he wants to have a friend over, there's not a damn thing Joseph can say about it. And, of course, the end of Jack's sentence is when Joseph comes out of the house. Clip two.
A damn thing who can say about what?
Not a damn thing the Congress can say to the president if he decides to veto that new tax initiative reform thingy.
Okay. Bye.
I just love that line reading.
I know.
Okay.
Oh, we miss him.
Yes, we do. He has passed. Later, Jack welcomes Ethan with a big hug just before Joseph gets home from his job at the job factory office job. What does he do? Have we ever found out? I don't know.
I don't know. It requires him to be a whole 2 hours away in Providence and not live with his children who are unsupervised after one of them died recently, but that's all we know.
That was before. They did say at the top of the season that he had moved his business to Cape Side, but I guess he's in the business because we don't know what he does. Mm. Anyway, he does not look friendly as he regards the two boys in the entryway, and without acknowledging Ethan, he calls Jack away for an interrogation. Jack says that Ethan is just a friend. Joseph said that if Jack had just asked his permission, he would have saved himself the embarrassment of having to tell Ethan to go home. And seriously, however old Jack actually is, it's too old for that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Jack says Ethan just traveled 2 hours to get there, so Jack is not kicking him out. Clip three.
Jack, this is not a good weekend for guests. It's not a good weekend for guests. This is not a good weekend for the kind of guests that I would have.
That is not what I said.
No, but you know, it's what you mean. I don't care, all right? He's a friend. He's staying. I don't have to justify that to you.
Yes, but you felt you had to keep it from me, which makes it all the more clear that it's not a good idea.
Yeah, I felt I had to keep it from you because I need to react this way.
My answer is no.
Look, you know what? I don't care what your answer is because I'm not asking. When I moved back home, there was a promise that this would be an open household, that I could live my life free of judgment.
As long as you're under my roof.
But the only reason I'm here is because of Andy.
Okay, I mean, that's true, but I assume that's why we never got any scene where Jack and Joseph had a conversation about ground rules. So for all we know, Jack just hoped things would be better, or that Joseph would not mostly be around, because whatever they did negotiate, we didn't see it.
Right. Like, I know that we're supposed to side with Jack on this, but fact is that, I mean, maybe this is just what John Ramos and I call the Patty Chase effect, which is like, we're old now. And when teenagers are teenagering, we're like, ugh, shut up, put down her cheese.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's like, well, this isn't necessarily Ethan is my gay friend issue. It's you didn't ask permission or whatever the parliamentary issue is.
Yes.
With that said, even though Jack is being a pill this whole episode, it's sort of like, okay, well, he's a teenager and this is what is going to happen. So
for sure.
On we go.
Indeed. Clip 4.
You know what? I'm glad you came back here this weekend because watching me hang out with my friends makes you suffer and you deserve to suffer.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. Too far.
Yeah. Wow. That's really a lot and it's not going to win him over. Like, stop being such a bitch. Like,
also, is that how you spoke to Grams? Because doubt she would permit that either. Jeez.
No. So when we rejoin Jack and Ethan the next day, Joseph brings a tray of drinks and asks what they're doing. Jack irritably asks what it looks like they're doing. And to be fair, they are sitting on either side of a chessboard studying it. So, okay. Joseph asks if they mind if he joins them. And Jack's like, yes. And Ethan sighs and avoids eye contact. And Joseph slinks off. Jack crabs that Joseph could be less blatant about surveilling them and apologizes to Ethan, who's, of course, been through it and back with his own dad and knows how to handle it because there's not an experience Jack has had that Ethan has not had first. And Ethan will be the first to tell you, and the second and the fifth. Later, Ethan and Jack are heading out when Ethan sees Joseph putting a frozen dinner in the oven and nicely invites him to come to dinner with them. Ignoring Jack's face, Joseph says if they don't mind, he'd love it. And when he goes to get a jacket, Jack glares at Ethan. All of this is very unsexy, too, by the way.
Yeah, not great.
Jack is still glaring at dinner. We rejoin them as Ethan is slobbering about some classic car Joseph used to have, and Joseph is eating it up. He tries to involve Jack by asking if he remembers a photo Mrs. McPhee took of him on it when Jack was a baby. Jack guesses he blocked it out. Ethan asks why Joseph gave up the car, and Joseph is truly happier in this conversation than way we have seen him ever as he talks about how much he loved it. Like, I did not know his face could do that, truly. He says Jack used to beg for rides in it. Does he remember? And Jack, even more pissily, says he thinks he already said no, which they were talking about the photo before. Relax. Ethan links at Jack's bad attitude just before Joseph suggests a trip to the classic car museum that is improbably just down the road and still open. When Ethan says it sounds great, Jack acts like he's been blown back in his chair and is great, all sarcastic, which, like, no thanks is a phrase you can use instead of being such a bitch about it. Just saying. At the museum, Joseph is mid-lecture about a 1926 Cadillac when an extremely pouty Jack pulls Ethan aside. Clip 5.
What's up? What's up is that I didn't ask you to come and visit so we can hang out with my dad, who hates me, okay, and doesn't even try to understand me, who can cry tears over a stupid car but can't muster up a shred of emotion for his own son. No, he stopped being my father a long time ago, Ethan. I don't want to spend some excruciating evening being reminded of that. I mean, come on. This is a nightmare.
Jack, calm down.
Boys, I'm going to head back. You can get home, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, I really thought things were getting better. I was so grateful for tonight. I canceled my business trip this weekend. Spend time with you. because I'm just not the father you want or need.
Well.
Poor Angry.
Yeah. I mean, this is some pretty skillful writing to put us on his side at all, honestly, because he has not been a great guy.
And he does do a great job at, like, being the dorky dad. Mm-hmm. Ethan is trying to give good parent and, like, bridge the gap.
Yep.
Classic cars are a good bet.
Mm-hmm.
I understand how Jack feels, but you could just say you don't want to go. I've been doing it ever since I met my husband. It's not that difficult. It really isn't. But yeah, he just looks absolutely stricken when he overhears this, possibly because his son has no idea how sound works. Like, he's 5 feet away.
Yes, they're in a like an echoey warehouse. Everyone in the county can hear you right now.
Yeah.
Never mind your dad. Anyway, back home, Jack gives Ethan a curt night on his way to bed. And no, Jack doesn't think they need to talk about what happened. Ethan knows Jack is mad at him, but he was just trying to help. But Jack says he's just mad. Joseph found a way to make himself the victim. Ethan says that Jack and Joseph are both victims of patriarchy, by the way, not that he says that part, and that it won't get better until Jack starts letting go of some of that anger. Clip six.
He's the one who did this to me, okay? He's the one that made me this angry. A year, Ethan. A whole year he spends walking around like I am the worst thing that ever happened to him. And he cancels one trip so he can passive-aggressively throw it back into my face and everything's supposed to magically fall back into place. It doesn't work like that.
Well, let me tell you how it does work, Jack.
Okay.
Do we have a choice?
Yes. Like, why would you phrase it like that? Like, you know, well, it might be different for you, but with my dad, etc. Like, learn how to talk to people. This is so off-putting.
Yeah, it is.
But he doesn't. Clip seven.
You keep walking around with all that anger. You and your dad are going to lose another year. And another one. And before you know it, you're going to wake up one morning and realize that you need him. Or he needs you. But it's going to be too late. You know, the other nice side effect of letting go of your anger is that you don't have to be angry anymore.
Fair.
Yeah, true.
You could have introed that a little more skillfully, but for you, that was actually pretty good and well acted by Kaufman also. His character is not the best, but he tries to make it work.
He does. And then they both get into their separate beds. But then Jack gets up to interrupt Joseph's furious calculating. Clip eight.
It's late.
Okay, did the calculator also talk shit about him in a warehouse? Because he's being so violent.
You're no cosine of mine. Really shouldn't encourage me with that shit, but thank you.
Sorry. Jack wants to know why Joseph decided all of a sudden to try to spend time with him. Joseph works with someone at the job company factory who has a son with a criminal record, a drug problem, etc. And it occurred to Joseph that his own son is a good kid and that Joseph doesn't even know him. So he thought he would like to and canceled his trip because someone had to make the first move. Jack is shook, as he said, he didn't think it would be Joseph. And then he literally makes the first move in a new game of chess. And we all get it.
And he loves him. He loves his live gay son.
He does. Jack doesn't look too sure as he counters, but they eventually smile at each other. And it's nice. And that's a nice way to nice place to leave it after all they've both been through. Mm-hmm. Finally, our A-plot! Pacey psychs himself up to tell Dawson about his new crush while Joey tries to think about something else. Roller skating! We finally return to Pacey and Joey exactly where we left them, making out at the town limits, weirdly. And when they come up for air, Joey smacks Pacey in the chest and clip nine.
Are you insane? How could you do that? How could you take some simple declaration of friendship as an invitation to just maul me, Pacey? Answer me! What were you thinking? What?
I don't know. God, I mean, it was an impulse.
An impulse?
Yes, an impulse. You know, sudden, momentary, and believe me, fleeting.
Do you have any idea the monumental implications of that meaningless little impulse? The ripple effect that it could create on our small but fragile universe?
You're right, Potter. Forgive me for thinking a kiss is just a kiss.
Well, it's true. A kiss is not just a kiss. Not between you and me, and you know why. Dawson, remember? I mean, he factors into this little hormonal meltdown.
Meltdown?
Yeah.
I just had a meltdown? Forgive me if I don't think that this is the worst tragedy in the history of humankind, that Pacey Witter, in a moment of impulsive, compulsive, hormone-induced insanity, would have the nerve to kiss Joey Potter. And you let me do it. You did. You let me do it. So what now? I guess the universe begins to unravel. Well, excuse me while I get in the car.
Oh, my God. So overwritten. It's so bad.
Yeah.
It's small but fragile universe. Like, I don't know. Do you want us to want her to be happy or not? Because if you don't, you don't write her like that.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. In yet another couldn't be me decision, Joey turns on her heel and starts walking into town. Pacey screams at her to get in the car. When she refuses, drives alongside her, begging her to get in, saying he didn't even mean to do it. It was just typical him, acting first and thinking later. And now that he's had time to think about it, he takes it all back. He then says it's 6 miles to her house. I refuse to believe this town is 6 miles end to end from what we've seen of it.
But I mean, I also refuse to believe that it took them until the sun came back up to get from the train station in unnamed college suburb of Boston.
Mm-hmm. If she doesn't get in, he'll just do this the whole time. So this works. She gets in scowling. He gathers she's not speaking to him. She's planning to keep that up indefinitely. And sometime later, we're with Bessie and Joey in the kitchen of the B&B where Joey tells her she and AJ broke up. And then Pacey went insane and kissed her. Speaking of insane, and you'll see this in the visual aids, Bessie appears to have some kind of silky floral cummerbund tied around her ribs over just like a regular ass t-shirt from The Gap. It's so strange. It's like an apron to wipe nothing on. I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, either it was an apron or I feel like this was the era of the mixed media top that was mm-hmm. like, it's a baseball top, but then the sleeves have been replaced by like filmy floral mm-hmm. something. And then there's just a cummerbund or like a, you know, dolly with actual moving legs like that yeah. lady had on in 16 Candles. Right. I think it was actually Joe Cusack. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not good.
Right. Well, I mean, you can see it moving independently when she sits down outside, which we're about to get to. Oh. Like, it's bizarre. Anyway, cut to Doug celebrating the kiss with a more reserved Pacey. And we keep cutting back between the two groups. Bessie can't believe Pacey could do this to Joey, who admits she technically let him do it, but still blames him entirely. Pacey, clip 10.
The whole thing was her fault. I mean, you know, she told me that I was the one that she thinks about. You know, me. And then she gives me this look. I mean, what was I supposed to do? Do you know how long I've been waiting for her to give me that look?
Yes.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
Intimately familiar.
Joey tells Bessie Pacey gave her a look. Bessie says, I know the look, which was very funny. Good line reading from her.
Mm-hmm.
Doug says that if Pacey gave her the look, the kiss happened and it was a good kiss. He doesn't know what the problem is. Pacey cites the hitting, punching, and rejection, not to mention Dawson. Joey says if Dawson found out, he'd never speak to them again. And a shot of her pouring syrup on her pancakes glides into Pacey finishing his syrup pour across town. Pacey also says Dawson is a problem. He can't risk his friendship with the brother he never had. Doug blows past that. And clip 11.
So what you're saying is Joey's like a bus.
Oh, what I'm saying is Joey is like a girl.
No, hear me out, okay? Joey is like a bus that can't go below 50. Dawson is a bomb hidden underneath that bus. You, and the brave, heroic police officer wanting to drive the bus to safety but can't because of the bomb.
Speed.
Does this take place in Ontario, Deputy Dog?
I do kind of wish we had an excuse to watch Speed now, but anyway, back to the B&B, where despite it being freezing cold the previous or possibly same day, the Potter sisters are dining outside, and this is where we see more of this cummerbund with the tie in the back. It's maybe more like an OB, but anyway, Joey asks whether Bessie thinks it was more than an impulse. Bessie doesn't know, and when Joey mopes that she's no help, Bessie says she's obviously not telling Joey what she wants to hear, so maybe Joey should talk about it with someone who can help her figure it out. Joey sputters that Dawson, Pacey, and Andy aren't options. Fortunately, Joey is about to be reminded that Jen exists. Doug says that things can work between Pacey and Joey if he defuses the bomb by telling Dawson in a way that makes it impossible for Dawson to hate Pacey. He should take Dawson somewhere that reminds him of their history together. When Dawson's thinking about how much Pacey really means to him, then Pacey can tell him. And he'll probably be so impressed that Pacey told him he'll give Pacey and Joey his blessing and they'll drive off into the sunset. Well, sail, but sure. Pacey can't believe this advice is so well thought out and un-Dougie-like, but even if it worked, he has skipped over the part where Joey physically attacked him. Doug says she wouldn't have reacted so strongly if she didn't feel something for him, too. Then we're at school. Jen asks Henry when he was going to tell her that tomorrow is his birthday. She has planned an outing for them, dinner, a movie, and then his present. She also says she has sources that told her this, like, what are the sources? We never find out.
Yeah. This, oh God. I mean, so much was made in the last episode of how she is spending all this time with him and is not seeing the credits cast.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but then you can't have a whole storyline about how she doesn't know it's his birthday. She doesn't realize he has a family. Mm-hmm. His family doesn't realize she should be invited to his birthday. I mean, I'm getting ahead of ourselves, but like, yes. This is all written so clumsily. There was another way to do this, and it's not this.
Right. So yes, he says he does have plans with his family. It's not a friend situation. She says she understands that, which is, of course, when a football player comes around the corner and high-fives Henry and says he'll see Henry at his party tomorrow. Jen can't think of anything Henry could say to dig himself out of this hole and leaves. And in the cafeteria, Joey's about to go sit with Dawson when Pacey beats her to it, so she wilts and looks for another seat. Back with the boys, Pacey has no reaction to a newspaper article Dawson has just handed him about a local construction project bulldozing the woods where they used to bond pre-adolescently. On the other side of the room, Andy comments that Joey seems weird and Joey nervously shrugs. Back to Pacey, telling Dawson they should go camping, give the fort one last hurrah. Dawson loves it. Then Jen is joining the girls' table, obviously still pissed about Henry and sure that he is ashamed of her. Andy says the three of them should have a girls' night out. Jen and Joey look equally dubious about this. Andy points out that the other two never hang out with anyone who doesn't have a penis. You know, we assume. Jen subtly laughs to herself as Andy tells them about the power of female bonding, clip 12.
Haven't you ever seen Thelma and Louise?
Andy, they killed somebody.
Yeah, and then they drove off of a cliff.
Yeah, but the point is they did it together. Solidarity. I mean, in this cold, cruel world, a girl can rely on one thing, her sisters. I need a little female bonding, and so do you. So what do you say?
I love that she's like, well, okay, fine. But the old man in the sea wasn't not about a fish. Like, okay.
she's right. They did have fun until they didn't, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jen still seems opposed until she sees Henry walk in and then decides she's in and Joey's not secure enough to abstain, so it's on.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
The next day, Pacey brings Buzz home, and when we see it in the daylight, this house is nice. Whatever job his mother works at all hours and not paying for babysitting, it's worth it. I love that house. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like, I didn't even clock that until you mentioned it. And mm-hmm. I just assumed like, oh, well, maybe she lives with her family. Like, I just didn't even think of it. But right. Yeah, that's not bad.
No. When Pacey tries to leave, Buzz holds him by the shirt and says he can't go. He's sitting on a post, by the way, which is how he can reach. Says Buzz has friends coming over to meet his semi-cool mentor. Pacey says he already has plans and shakes off Buzz's now double-fisted physical restraint, saying he's late to meet Dawson to go camping. Buzz wants to go, but Pacey says it's a no-kids trip and promises to take Buzz next time. In Jen's room, Andy is andying up girls' night way too excitedly, suggesting facials and pedicures while Jen and Joey just stare at her. When she runs off to get the stuff ready, Jen checks with Joey, and when Joey just chirps that she is okay, Jen says very seriously that if Joey's going through something big, she could talk to Jen. Joey asks if she has information she'd like to share, but it just seems to Jen from the edge of their friend group that there is a world balance that has been shifting. Joey would like to know how a meaningless moment that was over before it started became public knowledge. Jen, seeming to regret having started this, says nothing is public. She doesn't know specifically what Joey's referring to, but that it's clear from Joey's attitude, it's not meaningless. She repeats her offer to talk about it while Joey folds in on herself, Joeyfully. Walking along the sidewalk with their backpacks, Dawson and Pacey discuss how much easier this all was when they were 10. Pacey guesses a lot of things have changed, but change can be good, right? Even change that seems bad can turn out to be good. And we don't hear Dawson's answer about that, but I think we all know how he feels about nostalgia. They make it to the fort we're supposed to think they built together as children, which is remarkably still standing, so I don't buy it. Dawson immediately starts moping that it's not as impressive as it was in his memories, which is typical him. He says, it's just ordinary and maybe so is his life. Pacey's like, all of this over an old fort? We were 9. Dawson says that recently he's been trying to connect with who he was in the past, which, like, other than looking at his John Lennon poster sometimes, has he?
Yeah. Also, what past?
Right.
You're 16. You still haven't gotten it wet. Settle your shit down.
Well, he doesn't. He remembers himself as someone with passion who knew who he was and someone that anyone, including himself, would describe as full of passion and self-assurance at 9 is even more unbearable than current day Dawson. And that's saying a lot. So now he wonders if he never really was that person. And Pacey takes a deep breath and clip 13.
You know what? It's funny you should put it that way, because what it sounds to me like it. It sounds like you're looking for an answer, you know? And so am I, because just this morning I was sitting over breakfast with Deputy Doug and, of all people, to ask for an answer. But, you know, so he tells me that I should probably come to you because you're the one who's going to have the answer that I need, so.
Did you hear that?
No, what?
Nobody wanted this.
No.
Back at girls' night, Joey has a green face mask on and crabbily asks if they can take this gook off now. Jen would also like to move her face freely again, but Andy says they have 2.5 more minutes. Andy also made her mother's special popcorn, which reminds her of being a child and not of her mother, in a locked psychiatric facility, not getting visits from her family as far as we can see. Sure. Andy wishes they could be 10 again when everything was simple and Andy felt protected. Joey does miss the times she could tomboy it up with the boys like they were all the same without crushes getting in the way. Jen never got to be a little girl. Her mother wouldn't let her play in the dirt because it wasn't proper, nor could Jen wear her high heels because they were too expensive. Jen also wasn't allowed to pig out, as she puts it, because her mother was afraid she would get fat. Got it. Jen's mother sucks. We know. We met her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know.
Joey just wants to eat ice cream, pretend to be a kid, and forget about boys. Jen agrees the boys are twits. The worst is when they have feelings for you and won't admit it. Joey looks caught at this and briskly changes the subject, because apparently they were each supposed to supply an activity for this hangout, and Joey's is going to the roller rink, her favorite place, as a kid. Andy loves it. Jen thinks Joey's activity can overlap with hers and pulls 2 stripy pink shopping bags out from under a nightstand.
I don't understand. Like, is that her hostess money? And I mean, well, we'll see the outfits, but this really was a moment. Back then, the, like, you know, dressy pajamas, clubs that are beds. I mean, okay, good luck.
Pacey has apparently borrowed one of the 10-year-old's cell phones, which he thinks is just plain wrong for the kid to have. Oh, Pacey, just wait. To confirm with their parents that the kids are allowed to camp out tonight, Buzz reminds Dawson he was going to tell them a story. Dawson says it's about an old man who wanted to build a very special kind of amusement park, and Buzz blurts that it had dinosaurs and was called Jurassic Park, and Buzz has seen it 12 times. Dawson tries one about a boy named Elliot who thought he had a goblin in his tool shed, but one of the other kids knows about E.T. too. They also all know about Jaws. Hey, tell him one about John Lennon, see how that goes. But he doesn't. He says, not once there was a man who got in bed with his wife for peace, but instead something original about a former lumberjack named Max who used to live in that fort and stalks the woods still with a bloody axe, killing bunnies. Okay, but Max's favorite target is 9-year-olds. Over to the roller rink, where we see that Jen's gift was, in fact, draggy pajamas and nighties and feather boas, as the girls skate in them holding hands with their hair done up in 40s finger waves. Andy has been thinking about their boy complaints and agrees that they are twits, but there are times when they give you that look that says you're exactly where they want to be right now. Joey smiles in recognition as Andy says, "You melt, even when you don't want to." Pacey used to do that to Andy all the time, right before he kissed her, and Joey's face falls as she realizes there's yet another complication to this whole thing. Jen says Henry has a look like that. No one cares. They careen into the boards and Jen takes a break just in time to look behind her at the snack bar to see a birthday party in progress and the birthday boy taking a whack at a piñata. And of course, it is Henry. And even though this is clearly a baby party with tons of Henry's much older relatives in attendance, Jen decides to make a scene when he's mid-pinata strike. And when I say this is a baby party, I mean, there's a clown who snaps a balloon in shock just before Henry raises his blindfold. Jen, obviously, he didn't want you to see this for quite obvious reasons.
Yeah, but then why is the football team there? What's in that pinata?
Yeah.
Windstroll?
I mean, I figured the football players were like his friends from before he was on the team. And like they've been coming to this party every year, you know.
I mean, it could also be the older relatives wearing varsity jackets. Some of those dudes are 32.
It's true. Easily. Later, Buzz is snoring as Pacey digs up a spot next to the fire pit, pulls out a metal ammo box, and yells to Dawson to check it out. Someone hasn't spent enough time with the no-neck monsters to know you don't yell next to sleeping children unless you want them to wake up and resume bothering you.
Yeah, seriously.
Dawson forgot about this box full of their old treasures, clip 14.
Okay, the ticket's dubbed from the first time I saw Jurassic Park. And second and the third.
That's just sad, man.
Tell me about it.
Hey, check this out. This is Deputy Doug's pocket knife. You know, my dad never found the evidence, but he still gave me the spanking of a lifetime. Go figure.
Oh my God, look at this. Picture of me and little Joey Potter. God, look how beautiful she was even then. We had no idea.
We must have been deaf, dumb, and blind not to notice.
What's this? The secret code of Pacey Widow and Dawson Leary. Do you remember this? You drew this up the day that we
became blood brothers.
Yeah. It's our oath of loyalty.
Yeah.
Okay. This is great. I can't believe you found this. It's so, isn't it weird how you could just put your friendship with somebody in a box, bury it, and completely forget about it?
Not for you. My God, little Joey Potter. Barf. So condescending.
But also, like, you see each other all the time. Like, putting it that way makes no sense. Even this season, when they were trying to separate them because Joshua Jackson and James Vanderbeek apparently were not getting along, like, they're still interacting frequently.
Yeah. Also, this was not, like, you're still in high school. This happened when you were 9.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we're not talking decades here. It was 6 years ago. Settle down.
Right. Back at the roller rink, Jen assures Henry that her being there is just a coincidence. She would have left, but his mom insisted they stay so he can stop being mad. Henry says he's not mad, he's humiliated. She says actually she is because he lied to her and hurt her feelings and now this. But he says his mom threw him a party for a six-year-old and he didn't want his cool older girlfriend to witness it when he's already insecure about seeming like a little kid to her, obviously, again. She tells him for the millionth time his innocence is one of the things she likes most about him and that it's helping her find that in herself, which, great point. A few episodes ago, he was telling her how to find her own childlike wonderment or whatever the fuck, so being embarrassed about this does go against his whole thing as well.
Mm.
But anyway, she doesn't like being lied to. He understands if she never wants to speak to him again and skates off, but she follows and tells him his birthday present would have been a mint condition Born to Run on vinyl, but she sold it back to the record store for angry chick music. The best kind, by the way.
Uh-huh. Yep.
He guesses it's the thought that counts. She puts the bow around his neck and kisses him and no one wants it, but I almost buy it. When they skate off smiling, it's cute.
Yeah.
Back at the campsite, Dawson asks Pacey if he's still awake, then makes it so he might never sleep again. Clip 15.
It finally occurred to me what in my life hasn't lost its luster with time. My friendships. You know, I might be unsure of a lot of things in my life, but I'm always going to be sure of you. And Joey.
Me and Joey, huh?
Yeah. I mean, you're you're pure loyalty. You know, you're still the same guy who drew up that oath we took when you were a kid. Still the guy who'd do anything for a friend.
And Joey?
Joey? From the conscience? Soulmate? Inspiration? Point is, I'm really glad to have you guys in my life. I'd be lost without you.
I doubt they feel the same, and I really feel like they should assess that honestly for themselves and move forward, but this is a teen soap opera, so here we all are.
Yeah, she's my conscience. Fuck off. She's a person. Stop putting that on her. Ugh.
Yeah, really.
I mean, she also puts it on herself, as we unfortunately saw in the golf course party episode, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
After that, Wake clunks down on him. Pacey tries this. Clip 16.
You know, if I'm loyal to you, Dawson, it's only because you cast me in the role. You're a storyteller, you know? You see everything and figure out what it means. You see the look on those kids' faces while you're telling that story tonight? How caught up they were? You're the guy who builds this fantastic world. You just let the rest of us live in it.
These days it doesn't feel so fantastic.
It will, bro.
Okay. Stop puffing him up.
Yeah, really.
Back at Jen's, the girls are getting ready for bed in their regular pajamas. They weren't just wearing in a roller rink. While Andy brushes her teeth, Joey ramps up to sharing about her current romantic situation, and Jen immediately sets down her Bright Lights Big City because she knows whatever Joey is about to say is juicier. Joey checks again to make sure Andy's far enough away not to hear and then says Pacey kissed her, and Jen is so blasé about it. Like, I know she knows about the crush, but the kiss is new information. She clearly wants them to get together. She should be doing a silent scream right now so Andy doesn't hear, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But instead, clip 17.
I figured this thing would come to a head sooner or later.
I mean, nothing came to a head. I mean, there is no thing. I'm just freaked out and angry, and I don't understand why he would do something like this. I mean, it came out of nowhere, and...
Well, if it came out of nowhere, then how come I'm not surprised? You should ask yourself, Joey, if this is really nothing, then why are you so upset and so confused?
Good point. The next morning, Pacey says he will see Dawson later and takes off with kids. Buzz tells Dawson to look out for Max and his axe. Oh, if only. If only. In a convenience store, Buzz and Pacey are negotiating over what snacks Buzz may have, and I would not give this kid 12 pixie sticks either, when they run into Joey and Hayes are exchanged. Buzz immediately assesses the situation correctly and says hey to Joey, and the look she gives him back is very funny. You can see in the visual aids. Pacey says that if Buzz will give him a minute, Pacey will give him 10 sodas and a box of sugar, and then haze Joey again, and she haze him back, and clip 18.
So look,
about
I just wanted
to... About the other night. You go first.
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm sorry. You know, all that stuff about disaster and Dawson and the ripple effect in our universe, it was all right. I mean, what I did, I was just monumentally stupid. I don't know what I was thinking. So I just wanted you to know that it was an impulse, plain and simple, one that has left my body permanently. Promise.
It's okay, Pacey. I mean, I totally overreacted. I mean, something isn't a big deal unless you let it be, and it, you know, it's not a big deal. Why get so upset? I mean, it obviously meant nothing, right?
Right. Right, because what I did was a mistake.
Hi.
Right, well, I guess that puts us back to just being friends.
Definitely.
Great.
So real, but so frustrating.
God, and they're like both vibrating in the scene. It's
yes.
Unbearable.
I know.
You were like, no, it's just Dawson. Go fuck somewhere.
I know, but it's real. Like, if it would not be, we would not buy it if Pacey was like, no, I actually totally meant it, and I really like you a lot. Like, this is not what you say when you're 16. It's what you say when you're 24.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Agree.
Maybe when you're 24, I guess. Maybe not. Pacey babbles about taking Buzz home, and Joey looks sad as Pacey takes off. And by the way, you can see this in the visual aids too, but the Snapple product placement in the scene is off the charts. And if you know where in Texas I can get lemon iced tea, you have to tell me, because I've looked everywhere.
Yeah, every beverage really getting their money's worth. Nantucket Nectar is definitely, I was like, oh yeah.
A golden age of drinks in glass bottles, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
As they walk off, Buzz asks if that was the girl Pacey wants to kiss, and Pacey says it wasn't, just as Joey comes to the door of the shop and smiles as she watches Pacey and his ward trudging off. Like, what does that smile mean? Are you going to be the brave one? Someone has to do something. Ah! It's making me crazy.
God, that in the handshake.
I know. God. Make me crazy in a good way. Let's do the episode MVP. Doug had very good advice. It's not his fault. It didn't work because of stupid Buzz.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think Gay Yoda brought it back around.
A.K.A. Ethan. Yes.
A.K.A. Ethan. Like, yeah, let me tell you what doesn't work. And it's like, oh, brother. But then, I mean, Adam Kaufman sold it.
Yep.
Like, it did work. Jack was forced to sort of think about, like, well, do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? Not
right.
To quote that piece of shit, Dr. Phil, but that one time he made a good point with that.
Yep. Least valuable player. I'm going to say Jack, because he did right the ship in the end, but he really was such a bitch in this episode. It was very unpleasant.
Henry's parents, like, you know which birthday this is. What are you doing with a pinata? Unless it's full of airline bottles of booze, in which case you're also a terrible parent. Either way, what the hell?
Yep.
Next time on Again With This, it's a bizarre love quadrangle in the Green Mountains, as most of the credits kids visit Dawson's Aunt Gwen for spring break. Joey and Pacey fight their feelings, Andy meets a backdoor pilot, and back in Capeside, Gail and Mitch question their partnership, while Jen gets territorial. All of this and the absolute worst the Alloy catalog had to offer are in our visual aids. That's key visuals from this and every other episode of the podcast at againwiththispodcast.com. That site is also home to our entire archive of episodes, that's 90210 and Melrose Place, as well as Dawson's Creek, againwiththispodcast.com/subscribe, or call and text us, 210-767-2237. I'm excellent high fructose negotiator Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Neat Fort Tar Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tar Ariano. and we'd be lost without our producer, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Dawson's Creek is canceled. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.